Stack Pack. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery. What's up, guys?
How's it going?
Stack Pack back. What's up? We're partying. We're going to cover episode 3 of volume 2 of the Netflix rebooted Unsolved Mysteries.
I thought we were covering The Road to 270. Just kidding.
And today we're going to be talking about the search for Lester Holt, right? The news anchor?
Yeah. he took Brian Williams' place and everybody was like, and now everyone's looking for him, even though he's on the news every night.
Every night.
This one's, it's an episode called Death Row Fugitive, right?
Yes.
And this case is, this is actually a really short episode. It'll probably be a short episode. It's a short episode of the show as well. So,
really? Yeah. I didn't notice. How much shorter was it?
It's like 35 minutes, 36 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
You know why? You know probably why? Because I just binged the hell out of it and I didn't really like think
it
twice.
It didn't compute that it was shorter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's because the story is not that long itself, but they do a little bit of padding with interviews and, you know, it's kind of just like, where the fuck is this guy? It's really a frustrating tale and we'll just kind of go over it. There's some interesting, I wouldn't say updates, but you know, things in the oven, you know, buns in the oven.
I find it interesting that in 2020, in the world of everything being so, you know, where you need your social security or your driver's license.
Monitored.
I find it fascinating that this man has been able to elude authorities for this many years.
He probably stole someone's identity, like a recently dead guy.
No, I think
one of those scams.
I think this dude just probably continued to paint houses and just, you know, cash only.
Oh, yeah. I guess you could do that. Easy.
I mean, painting a house isn't cheap. Like, to paint my house, it's going to cost me like $8,000.
Yeah.
But then again, I also have stucco, so you have to use a stupid special paint.
Stucco sucks, yo.
And then, what if they commissioned him to do like a really nice painting?
Oh yeah, what if he did the Last Supper on the side of a wall? Oh, dude, I can't wait to
talk. So, you know what his paintings look like?
What do they look like?
They look like you remember in The Shining?
Yes.
They look like they'd be hanging over Dick Halloran's Florida home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like when Danny calls out to him and he's like in Florida and there's just like this painting of like a naked woman with a huge afro.
Yeah.
Like kind of bent over. And then above his window is just like she's another beautiful African goddess doing some other sort of nudie pose in 70s and not much clothes, but just the hair, you know, you're able to tell it's the 1970s. But yeah, all of his paintings look like Dick Halloran's style, or I should say Scatman Crothers style.
I would love to see if this dude is still painting, and if anybody has his paintings in their home.
I want that to be the way they find him. Like somebody at like a low key gallery in like Taos, New Mexico. It's just like, oh, it's mainly like, you know, adobe houses and you know, and desert landscapes and all this stuff. And then there's just like a section of like strong, muscular black people.
Yeah,
and all with afros, right? Am I imagining that? No, they all did have afros, right? I mean, I guess it was the time, right?
Well,
it
maybe was like because that was the time that 60s, he was painting. 70s. I wonder if his paintings. I'm sure they've progressed.
Who but do you think he paints now?
God, I don't know. He's pictures like of Beyonce.
He graduated, dude. I don't know, man. When we were in Santo Domingo, we were walking down the strip, like in the downtown area. And there was like fucking all the amateur painting. Well, amateur, you know, just like street paintings. It was all voluptuous. It was just booties.
I'm just big, just, thick gals.
Yeah. But, and not like super realistic, like just like kind of like abstract, just like big old booties.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Do you think he listens to Cardi B?
Dude, that's what I was going to say. I bet you he's all about that. He's all about that. Well, we shouldn't be talking. Ah, fuck this guy. He's a child murderer. Yeah. But maybe he would be into a Lizzo or a Cardi B. I don't know. But anyway, fuck this guy. Let's talk about him.
Yeah, he's a terrible person, despite the fact that he's a talented artist.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, not even the U.S. Marshal fucking hates him. I love the U.S. Marshal. Takes place in Mansfield, Ohio, and we meet Myrtle Carter, and she's like, I wouldn't guess her age, but she's like, you know, she's an older lady now.
Guessing a woman's age is not
that's not appropriate. That's not
appropriate.
We've said some mighty borderline offensive things on this podcast, but I won't do that.
Nope. 96.
So she's recounting the story of what happened to her sister, Mary Ellen Diener.
Southern gentleman.
Yeah, we are. Technically, I guess we are Southern gentlemen.
Southern Western.
Yeah, Southwestern gentlemen. She's recounting the story of her sister, Mary Ellen Diener, who in 1965 was brutally and senselessly murdered. Mansfield was a safe town growing up. They were never scared to walk on the street alone. They talk about how Mary Ellen was, of course, a sweet girl, and her sister can only really remember her just giggling with her friends. There were 7 siblings among all of them. They said they kind of like the boys, they like assumed gender roles, like the boys would do all the like tough yard work and clean the floors while the girls would do the dishes and a bunch of kids all together.
Do the washing.
So one day when they're doing the chores, November 15th, 1965, Mary Ellen and Brenda, one of the other sisters, they take a taxi to the dry cleaners to get their, the laundromat to get their, clothes just dried.
The reason for them to go to the laundromat is that their dryer breaks, leaving their clothes wet. So their mom puts them in a cab to go to the laundromat to dry them.
Yeah, which was next door to grandma's. So it's not like, you know, it's not like it's normal. Something normally that
it's just something like, oh, you know, pop the loads in the dryer, go hang out with grandma and, you know, come back, pick it up, fold it, and leave.
Yeah, and so, the way they made it sound too, it sounds like this is something they've done often. It's not.
Yeah,
it's not something that's, you know, this isn't like a new thing for them.
So they run out of change for the dryer, and Mary Ellen's gonna walk the 5-minute walk to the other laundromat to get change for, I guess, the dollar that they had.
Yeah, and they show it. It's right around the corner.
And Brenda goes to the grandmother's after a while because Mary Ellen hasn't returned. The grandmother makes Brenda stay there while she goes looking. And then the grandmother actually comes across like the cops that found her, right?
Yeah.
Like the crime scene.
Yeah, she had already been found at that point and by the police.
So, but this was over a course of a while. It takes a while for Brenda to get suspicious and realize that her sister should have been back a long time ago. So they were pretty easily able to tell who this dude was. They start by determining the caliber of, and the type of gun. They track that down to a gun store, Diamond Hardware on South Diamond Street. They see the description of the weapon written down, and they see that it was purchased by a Lester Eubanks. And then they start talking to people in the neighborhood to give them some information about Lester. And
he was known as Nunchuck Kid.
The fucking Nunchuck fucking weirdo.
You know, we had one of those in El Paso. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he beat up the youth pastor at the
What?
I don't know about that.
He used there to was walk a guy around. That walked around with nunchucks?
He didn't walk around with nunchucks, but okay, he did karate.
He didn't beat up a youth pastor, but he got into a fist fight with a guy that ran a a restaurant that was like a youth group thing.
He used to, oh, the dude from, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he got into a fight with Rob.
I didn't know that. So his name is Adrian. His name's Adrian. And he used to walk around like kind of around the high school that we all went to. But he would walk to the video game shop, Major Players, and he would sit and play video games there like all day. And yeah, he reminded me that it reminded me of that guy. He used to walk around and he would do karate and stuff out in the street. Just kind of
there like, was a period where he used to carry a kendo stick and just like
flail
it around.
Not nunchucks, but he did. I remember he did have like a weapon. Like he wasn't like harmful. He wasn't malicious to anybody. He would just like kind of mind his own business and walk and do like practice karate in the street.
So this guy he hurt people. He murdered this little girl. He was a weird guy. He walked around the street with fucking nunchucks, which is also kind of creepy because he ends up murdering children. He's like, oh, cool. Come look at my nunchucks. The sister says that, yeah, he was just like, yeah, just a weird guy around town. Like we said, he apparently grows up in Mansfield. He's sharp dressed and he's definitely a sexual predator. He had two priors for sexual offenses. At the time he commits this murder, he's out on bail for an attempted rape.
Yeah. And this was in 65. There wasn't a lot of that going on at that time.
Well, and if there was, they would just fucking tell people, no, okay, that's bad. Don't do it again.
Yeah, and then
like, let like him back by out. Today's standards, this dude would not have been on the
fucking absolutely streets. Not.
Like, yeah.
Although the way they make the make the prison system sound later on in this story,
it's a nightmare.
Jail prison in the '70s might have been
pretty fun.
Been dude, pretty better, fun,
like a hotel. Yeah,
so fucking dumb. So Sunday morning, they pick this dude up. He immediately confesses. He gives him details that are fucking ridiculous. Like he just sees the girl walking past him, right? And then he just calls her behind the house, grabs her, I guess. She screams, and then he just shoots her twice. And he says the screaming stops. And then this asshole goes to his apartment to get ready to go downtown and dance. And then on his way to the bus, he sees this, he goes and checks and sees the girl still fucking like clinging to life.
Yeah, 20 minutes. It was 20 minutes later.
20 minutes? Fuck.
20 minutes later, gasping for breath, trying to scream for help.
Yeah. And he gets a break and finishes.
Like, and ugh. That guy reading what happened, like his confession.
That's, I think that's the U.S. Marshal. Yeah. He's like, I can't read this.
I can't. He's like, I can't do it. Like, fuck that guy, basically, is what he said.
Myrtle says that this really, really stuck with her sister Brenda, the one who was also at the laundromat, until her death. And they don't give any specifics of that, but I guess this sister passed away. Apparently she was in shock for a while. And this just kind of destroyed the whole family. The mom was also never the same again as well.
Yeah, man, that'll destroy your family for sure. This is a huge event.
The whole family was there at trial. He apparently testified, which one of the experts say is like a textbook narcissist trait. Like, just, oh, I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to have my say. So he's convicted to death in Ohio. The Ohio prison system's pretty fucked up, and he's wrapped up in jail for a while with the death penalty. They talked to this old ex death row inmate named Bill. And he talks about how Lester was like a conniving piece of shit. Like he was all suave, but he was, you know, hiding a dark side, I guess.
Yeah. And he said he stayed away from him. I remember he said, I didn't talk to the guy. Just kind
of. They said he's very opinionated. He had attitude.
Yeah.
Didn't go around him.
He was a rude, crude dude with a bad attitude.
Yes.
You could say that.
As Peter Panning would say from Robin Williams and Hook. And then they talk a little bit about his painting, but we already got into that, so we'll just move on. Apparently he like had he attended some art shows and
yeah,
so I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And like showed his paintings off. They said that he stood there and showed his paintings and took pictures with people who had no idea that he was a convicted child molester. Child murderer.
Rapist and child murderer. The marshal says that this wasn't unusual to allow death row inmates to, like, you know, use their creative sides. But
yeah, I get that. But I
like,
mean,
yeah, going to the art show, that's like another.
Yeah, that's level. A whole. Yeah.
That might happen. I think that might actually have happened maybe a little bit after they abolished the death penalty in Ohio, because then it reverts to a life sentence. Right?
So on that, he was found guilty and he was scheduled to be executed 3 different times, and each time it was pushed back. And then during that time, that's when they abolished the death penalty and his sentence became a life sentence.
The family's furious. Confused is what Myrtle says as well.
Was it just one life sentence? I feel like it wasn't. I feel like it was more.
I don't know. It might have been.
Took one life, so it'd be one life sentence.
Right, but a life sentence is like 25 years, isn't it?
No, that's life sentence with parole. But seeing that he was on death penalty,
yeah,
he would have been a life sentence without parole.
Yeah, I don't think there was any chance.
2 different life sentences.
Because he was on the death penalty, there's no chance of him getting out. It was just a life sentence, like all of his life. So being there for life, he uses his charms. All the guards become his friends. They allow him to enter an honor program, which is ridiculous. The honor program's for people that are, you know, it's to help them get acclimated to life on once they're able to get out.
And, right,
you know,
have he a shouldn't smooth transition. Have had access to that, right? Like that's... And,
that's what they say. That's what they. That's what the cops say in the episode too. They're just like, why was he part of any of these? But I guess he was just so nice and charming with the guards and stuff.
So, what was some of the activities that they got to enjoy in that program?
Driving trucks from prison to prison. They were letting him run errands with guards, but still. This is when they talk about this. And once he's in the honor program, is when he's able to attend several art shows. Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Apparently, it was a national reform movement preparing people for outside living. Is their official
God, right? That's like so that's stupid. That's fine if you're like
if you're gonna actually live on the outside.
Yeah, but he wasn't. He should have never been eligible for that kind of a program.
So they let him in some of these other. Reform inmates go Christmas shopping unsupervised at a mall.
This is just
that's like, a great idea.
God. Fucking stupid, dude. It's like I want to laugh, but I'm just like
in a mall where he had access to commit the murder or any type of assault or with people at the mall while
they're all in civilian attire. Like none of them, you know, they're not like in chains. What? Who are they giving Christmas presents to? They're in fucking jail.
They mail them out, David. Each other.
Fuck that. Send them a check. They're in jail. I don't think they expect much from you.
Yeah.
So fucking stupid.
What I also find interesting is seeing like his rap, they sending his Christmas record. Presents
to? I'm sorry, Dan. Say again.
I say what's interesting is like, you know, if you look at his record, it'd be like, you know, like he's a sexual predator. And then you just like... introduce him into like the perfect area to to prey on someone.
Whether or not he escaped, which we find out later in a little while, or whether he had the opportunity
way to let the cat out of the bag.
I got an hour.
Everyone's seeing this shit if they're listening to this.
I got an hour. I can do some bad murder stuff.
So they're supposed to meet up in 2 to 3 hours at a spot, and of course Lester doesn't show, as we know.
And I bet they freaked the fuck out when he didn't show.
Oh, but this makes a lot of sense.
Oh shit! This was a bad idea.
Child and was never getting out of jail, and we just let him.
This was bad, 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 bad. Whose idea was this? God damn it!
Question: how long before they started to panic? Was there like 5 to 10 minutes?
Oh, I'm sure it was immediate.
He's just running a little late. His watch stopped.
I'm sure.
Or was it just like, oh, fuck?
Like apparently among the family of Mary, they all found out, and they were just apparently they were all just repeating to themselves, like in horror and shock. They just kept saying Christmas shopping, like Christmas shopping, like what?
Yeah,
it's so ridiculous.
That's appalling. That's a slap in the face.
Yeah. So they think that he made advance arrangement because his visits went from like once a month to like
I forgot
once a week, right? Something like yeah, increased activity. So they think it was pre-planned. They have a nationwide manhunt for the guy. And, yeah, no one's ever found this guy. 20 years later, in 1993, so he goes missing in 73. And then in December of 93, they, you know, somebody is still into, a new officer is looking at their caseload and comes across this. So they just look up his name. They're like, maybe he's in jail in another state. It's possible. You know, it's still the early 90s. So he looks him up to check out what's going on. And there's nothing even under his name.
Yeah.
Clerical error? I don't know. So there was
inside job.
There wasn't even a warrant or there was nothing. There was no flag on his name, and I'm sure by that time he changed his name five times. So who knows if it would have mattered? But nobody was looking for him.
Yeah, and you know what? Now that you mentioned
20 years.
Now that you mentioned it, I bet you what's a good theory, and they show this: if he had gotten pulled over because his name was not in the system, he could have used his real ID and nobody would have known. And he, as soon as they knew that they weren't looking for him, he could have legally went and changed his name legally and gotten a birth certificate and everything.
Yeah, but
so he could possibly have all his legitimate documentation to be another person.
Damn. How would he ever have known, that his name wasn't that no one was looking for him though.
If he had gotten pulled over by chance, like they said, if he had just gotten some kind of minor traffic stop and they saw and they took his ID,
panicked and used his actual ID.
And he's like, oh my God, they didn't arrest me. He's like, they must not be looking for me.
I kind of think he's smarter than that.
I don't know. It could be what Dan said, that he, you know, gets paid in cash and,
He's just
doing odd jobs.
It goes from town to town. So 20 years without anything, and then they realize that that's might have to do with the fact that he hasn't been on anybody's radar. The nationwide manhunt has not been on anybody's radar. So the story goes on America's Most Wanted, 1994, September 94, and a lady calls in and says that she used to party with him in the 70s, essentially. And she said that he was living with the lady named Kay Banks so Kay Banks was married to Lester Eubanks' cousin. And at this point, he was dead. So Kay Banks was the widow of Lester Eubanks' cousin. That makes sense, right?
Yes. We're tracking.
So, and apparently she was freaked out when the cops actually went and asked some questions, and she just said everything she knew. She said she wanted to cooperate. And that story, well, the version they give us is that she says that he lived in LA with her for a while, but not anymore. So Darnell Banks, who was Kay Banks' dead husband and Lester Eubanks' cousin, was a singer who actually cut a record or two. He was killed in Detroit. So Kay and Lester actually became pen pals when Lester was in jail, and they fell for each other. So he tries painting houses in this tiny little town in Michigan, and then after a while, somebody buys him a bus trip to California. So on the way to California, Kay relays this story that Lester tells her about how the cops come on the bus, right? And he's like, I'm toast. I'm cooked. Yeah. It's over.
The jig is up.
All they were looking for was fruits, right?
Imported fruit.
he just nodded or waved at the cops, and that was it. And apparently at that point he thought he was like, I'm scot-free. I'm good. He just smiled at them and he's free. And so Kay was super surprised when Lester actually showed up at her door. He was using the name Victor Young. And he was smart. Apparently he had got a hunting license with this name that had no picture, and he would just use that as his ID for things that he needed, which had no picture, like we said. Apparently he was an asshole to her. He intimidated her. He bullied her. And, she got fed up to the point where she said that, a detective or some cops had been in touch with her asking questions, and that's all he needed to just take the fuck off. And she was glad to be rid of him.
Yeah. she made up that story, right?
And that's the, yeah, yeah. And that's the last she ever saw of him. And I believe her story.
I think so.
Kate told the cops that Lester had been working at a mattress factory in Gardena, another town in California, right? Pretty sure. So once they go to the mattress factory, they can place Victor working there until the mid-80s. And this is like 96 when they're looking into this, 94 to 96. By 96, everything's all the leads have dried up again. And everything goes cold for a little while. So in 2003, Lieutenant Michael Vinson starts looking into the whole Lester Eubanks case. When he comes across Mose Eubanks, who was Lester's dad, and he was still around the area.
Yep. So he pays him a little visit.
Yeah. He goes and talks to him. And what does this guy say? He's tight-lipped, right?
Mm-hmm. And he even tells them, he says, I'll talk to you about anything, but I won't talk about Lester.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that's what he wants to fucking talk about. He did tell the cops that there's nothing anyone can do to bring that girl back. And when the cop asked him, when Michael, Lieutenant Michael asked him, do you think justice was done with your son? He just replied, people change and go on to start new lives. That's all I will say about Lester.
Yep.
So they asked around, tried to get information of people that knew him, and they found an informant. And she said she was at Moe's house when he got a call one day. And then when he returned, he said that it was his son in Alabama who was painting houses. The lieutenant was easily able to check out all the other siblings, and none of them were in Alabama. So that really got their hearts pumping for a little bit. He gets a subpoena, and he gets Moe's Eubanks' phone records. There's several calls coming and going to a center for troubled youth that was in Alabama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So the guy, once they call around and ask, apparently there was a guy who was a janitor there at this home for troubled youth or center. He didn't have an ID, and when they ran his social security number, it was totally fake. So we know that he did change his identity at some point. And they were pretty sure he might be Lester, and he had moved on.
Yeah, and it was really close, right? Like it was. I feel like when they said it was really close to when they showed up.
Yeah, months.
Yeah,
like a couple of months, I think. Yeah, and that's the last like credible thing that Unsolved Mysteries gives us. This dude's a piece of shit. He senselessly murdered a little girl in the 1960s. I don't care how much. I mean, that's a long time ago. I don't care how much you can change. He was a fucking adult. You know, he wasn't some little kid. It wasn't an accident. It was malicious. I don't care if he's a nice, sweet old man. This guy needs to go the fuck down.
Yep.
There's a $25,000 reward if he's your fucking grandpa or something.
Hate to correct you. It's no longer $25,000.
Is it more?
Is it more?
It's now $50,000 to lock this guy up.
Nice. There was one other little story recently. This story is from November 20th, 2019, and it's weird that this isn't talked about in the episode at all. The headline reads, DNA holds promise in finding fugitive Lester Eubanks, but FBI rules privacy question.
Yeah, I read that.
Privacy questions loom. Sorry, I kind of made it into a run-on sentence. So basically what they're saying is there's a guy who claims to be Lester Eubanks' son, right?
Right. And he's a product of, he says that Eubanks raped his mom, basically, which led to his birth.
Yeah. And so nobody knows if he's actually Lester Eubanks' son, but he's willing to provide his DNA.
The FBI is prohibiting him from using his DNA to find Lester because of some sort of
a privacy issue.
Yeah.
That's so fucking stupid. Yeah, the article, apparently they have a whole podcast. I kind of want to check it out, but the story, you know, I don't know. I'm sure there's plenty of sightings of this guy that are.
And I think from what I've heard, this case is the one that provided the most tips during the series. Is it, I think some, I read that somewhere that this case has generated more tips than any others of people saying that they know him or know where he is or knew where he was.
This lady in this article, it talks about this lady, Natalie Ram. She works at the University of Maryland law. She's a law professor and a leading expert on the laws surrounding DNA data and privacy. And she says familial searches are a touchy subject. The federal government has a policy in place that they do not permit familial searches. And so this guy can't use his DNA to prove, even if it, to help, you know, basically he could put it into a 23andMe thing and we could find some child or some, you know, offspring or distant cousin or something to track him down. But he would be, he'd be in his 70s, but he could very much still be alive.
Oh, he is definitely alive.
Who knows, man?
No, I'm willing to bet, man.
All I know is that he's missing and he sucks. This is kind of a case. There's not really like theories, you know, it's just like,
no,
the, you got away with this shit. It's just, fuck.
And that's what's still so, to me, it's just so astounding. Like, what is this guy doing? What has he been doing? Who's taking care of him? Somebody else has to be taking care of him.
Yeah, apparently his fucking dad. Yeah, his dad was able to turn the cheek on this.
But that was in 2003, so.
Yeah, I'm sure he's very dead by now. But the dad, at least. Who knows? Yeah, that's why I kind of think maybe he's dead or something. Like, he just hard labored going from town to town, changing his name, and then he just kind of like had a heart attack in an alley or something. I don't know.
Well, I hope he's dead, but.
Yeah, he deserves it. Old, alone, and done for.
Yeah, with it, bury him with his paintings.
Yeah, bury him with his naked Afro paintings.
Some freaky deaky shit.
And his nunchucks.
And his fucking nunchucks. And his fucking.
His nunchucks?
And his bitch ass turtleneck. Yeah, it's just. God, dude. Just that detail of him returning to the scene and seeing this girl still alive and just.
Oh, dude, on the way to go out, he's like, oh, I'm going to go check on this girl before I go.
Yeah, it's awful. Truly awful. Lester Eubanks, if you're out there, fuck you.
Yeah, the chances of him listening to us is slim to none.
You don't know, man.
He could be eating up everything that's coming right? out.
Dude, he testified about his fucking... He testified at the... At that at the murder trial.
You're right. He could be.
Maybe he's eating the shit up. He's listening to people talk about him. Maybe not us, but I'm sure he's definitely somehow has seen the Unsolved Mysteries episode.
Oh, yeah.
If he is still alive.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun to think of. It's also fun to think of that evil wench from the first season of the new Unsolved Mysteries, Sandy.
Oh, yeah.
The crappy, the murder mom.
Yeah.
Dude. Oh, somebody, I saw a comment on our Twitter, or it was Twitter or Instagram, and somebody was saying that apparently the other siblings weren't in the episode because apparently they're still close to Sandy.
Really?
Oh.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
So, like, we don't want to rat on moms.
What? It's like she murdered. She murdered her daughter and her fucking. One of her husbands, and they still stand by her.
What?
Yeah, that's I don't know how true it was. I need to look into it. But somebody sent it. I don't know. It was a comment. I can't picture it. Yeah. You know. We're recording this on Thursday, November 5th, day 55 of the election results. So yeah, it's an interesting time. Day 55. It's nice to take a quick little break from watching the news, which I can't seem to take my eyes off of. It's pretty fun. It's pretty interesting. I don't want to jinx anything, so I'm not going to say anything. But yeah, Fun Unsolved Mysteries break. We're going to get you this Ghost Tsunami episode as soon as we can, because we're really excited to talk about that one. But
yeah, we're going to have another guest on, right? We're going to have Dan Derwin back.
Yeah. Dan Derwin, everybody's favorite Staten Island sanitation man. We get comments. People like Dan Derwin, so it's fun. It's fun. It's also fun that he has a nice mic because he's like in a punk band, so he's got recording equipment. So he can talk with us and it sounds good. Like we're actually in the room and not on complete opposite sides of the country.
You know what? So, yeah, you know what's weird is we were kind of like that one trailblazing the whole like. Because we've been doing this for a long time across country, and now everybody's doing like Zoom, FaceTime. This is how they're conducting meetings.
Yeah.
Dude, we totally trailblaze this bitch.
We're used to this, yeah. Yeah, there's not many podcasts that are like that. Like my brother and me, they all live in different towns, so they're always doing.
Hey,
it.
By
like,
the
yeah,
way,
but we did it globally.
That's true.
Oh, we have done
different time zones every week.
Oh yeah,
we have done it globally when
because
you're like,
you used to be on the road, yeah. Man.
None of those episodes sound good, particularly because you're like in a hotel with a lapel mic. But
that's okay.
Yeah. So yeah, fun ghosts. Well, not really fun. It's a really sad story of the ghosts next week, but it's really spooky and well done. So we'll get back at you.
Ooh, I'll have a good spooky story for my new job.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, we do have a ghost story for you. Also, fuck Lester Holt. I mean, no, Lester Holt's fine. I don't know. I guess it depends where your politics lean. But Lester Holt, pretty cool. Lester Eubanks, piece of shit. Please, nobody try to arrest Lester Holt. He is not a death row fugitive.
No, he's a good guy.
But yeah, we'll be back soon. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you. Good night.